This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in to the Yachts and Nautibles podcast. Matt Preem, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on the show. Welcome to April. Welcome to Monday. Tomorrow, all three of us will be at spring football practice as it resumes for the Oregon Ducks. But today we will discuss the mailbag. We'll open up the mailbag. We've got a couple questions. A lot of it football focused, which I think we were all kind of expecting.
Yeah, no, we kind of ran through our end of year reviews on basketball, both basketball programs over the last week. And so the focus turns to football. Perhaps the more uplifting of the options as well, I should note, considering that both basketball programs had a pretty disappointing season, and spring football is always kind of a fun, optimistic time. But we're going to start with a recruiting question here from a frequent question asker at Robbie Parnes, who asks, with the visitor list for the spring game continuing to grow, and by the way, the spring game, April 29th, which top 100 prospects do you give Oregon the best shot at landing? Also, who might not be realistic, but is the highest on your wish list other than Raiola? Hashtag Otson Audibles. Thank you, Robbie, for leading the show today. Matt, I'm going to kind of throw it your way just to start. What do we know about the spring game, possible visitor lists? Kind of, do we have a sense of the size of the scope of it and kind of maybe some names to know?
Yeah, I think this list is going to expand. It's already somewhere around 15 or so guys that have confirmed to be here, double digits, I'll say, to confirm to be here right now. A lot of them are 2025, 2026. There are 2024 players on campus. I think the biggest guy to get and is more so to keep, and that's Anderson, the receiver, four-star from Southern California. He's flirted with Colorado a little bit. I think he's been visiting some other schools as well this past month. He's an elite dude. And so to make sure that he stays committed is going to be a big one. I think another guy that's going to be here, but not for the spring game, it's the week before, is Luke Moga. We talked about like last week. Quarterback. This is maybe the highest rated guy that Oregon's got a really legit chance with. He's from the state of Arizona. He's kind of blown up this winter, this past spring. You know, he's a three-star quarterback. It wouldn't surprise me though in the slightest that, you know, if he shows up in fall for high school football season and he's a four-star. So I know that's kind of going away from spring game type deal, but I think just the month of April in general, you're going to see a huge group of guys roll through. Maybe if I had to pick somebody that's going to be here this week, you know, that particular weekend that is visiting Oregon, I would probably go with Elijah Rushing. He's a five-star. He's a top 10 player in the country. He's from the state of Arizona, from Tucson. I don't necessarily think Oregon is like the driver here, but they're in the picture. They're in the mix. He's got everybody after him though, but you could go a long ways with a recruiting class and having a chance at a top 10 class if you can get a big five-star to join the fold early. No idea if he's going to make a decision early. I doubt it. But put yourself in position with Elijah Rushing, who's been to Oregon a couple times. Do that and you've gone a long ways towards securing that top 10 class.
Rushing was – that was my guy. He was the clear number one answer for me other than Dylan Raiola, who would be a fantastic addition to the class. But same thing with rushing every school in the country. Well, Steve Wiltfong reported a couple weeks ago that he was coming. But, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. What do you have, Matt? You have something on that?
No, I've just said that I thought I read somewhere that it was like he's – being skeptical now if he's going to finish his visits. I thought that was what Steve reported. Maybe I just read it wrong as if he's still going to visit those schools, but I thought I saw Steve saying like he may not even finish his visits now. Regardless, I don't think he's in play for Oregon.
Like seriously. No, I don't really think he's in play. I think Oregon will certainly give their best efforts, but I don't think that's going to be a realistic possibility. Rushing obviously is one of the best defensive line prospects in the country. He's been a guy that Oregon has recruited for multiple years now under Mario Cristobal and now Dan Lanning. You watch his film. He's big. He's explosive. He's extremely athletic for a guy his size. He's also a West Coast kid, or West Coast, quote unquote, as a guy out of Arizona. So I think that's a huge perk for Oregon that, you know, for one time you have this big old five-star prospect, and distance can be a factor, and distance can be in favor of you, and can get him onto campus quite often from a guy from Arizona. Another guy who I know is visiting this month, I'm not sure if he's 100% visiting for the spring game, is Brandon Baker, offensive lineman out of Modern Day. Big offensive tackle down there who we had Greg Biggins on the podcast. Eric and I talked to him. He mentioned that Brandon Baker was really high on Oregon, extremely high on Oregon, with Adrian Clem as their offensive line coach. And now that Adrian Clem is gone, it's good that Brandon Baker is coming back to visit. It'll be a huge weekend whenever he does visit for Alik Terry to get into him or get into his social circle and start talking to him. I'm sure he already has, but it'll be great to get him on campus and have Alik Terry, you know, diagnose the new plan that they have moving forward for a guy like Brandon Baker's talent. He's the premier offensive tackle on the West Coast this season. You look two classes ago, that was Josh Connerly Jr. Oregon landed him. I think that Oregon is in a good position to land Brandon Baker eventually. Who knows where that recruitment takes off, but with the work that Adrian Clem did of just getting Brandon Baker to understand the Oregon brand, understand where the program is headed, I think that's really put them in a good position with him. So he's maybe the most realistic of the unrealistic prospects. But those are my two guys. I think those are the easy answers as of now.
We should note with Baker, Clem had to do some sales work, but there's also the history, the ties to Oregon. His older brother, Gary Baker, played here for five years. So there's a little history there that gives Oregon an inside track, maybe. I agree with Jared. Like, I don't even think he's unrealistic. I think Oregon will be, like, I think Oregon's right in the middle of that one, everything that we've kind of read and seen. So that'll be certainly a priority, though, as Jared kind of outlined. That's the top offensive tackle recruit in the country right now. and certainly, gosh, probably one of the two to three to four biggest targets on Oregon's board, regardless of position. So a name to know. Matt, anyone else that you want to mention before we move on to the next question?
I just think that they're going to get a couple of their other commits. Jackson Jones is going to be here for an official visit – or unofficial visit, excuse me. Their in-state prospects are all going to be here. And then I think maybe one to know down the road, which could be pretty wild that we're even having this discussion, Keeley Smith Jr.
Yep.
I think he's a 2025 quarterback. Probably going to be here for the spring game. I'd been talking with his dad a while ago, and they mentioned that they were probably coming. I don't know if it's official yet or not, but that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And the storylines of that would be pretty crazy.
Yeah, having a legacy recruit of that
at caliber, that position.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same name. The dad was pretty darn remarkable as a player, pretty renowned amongst like Oregon's fan base. That would be really, we haven't really seen that at Oregon. That would be an interesting one. And gosh, you hope for his sake that, he's able to make his own decision in this recruitment. I know Keeley probably is dying for him to be an Oregon uniform. I would imagine he's probably grown up you know, rooting for and watching Oregon. But that will be recruitment, as Matt indicated, a pretty far ways off in terms of reaching a conclusion, but one to monitor.
Isn't it interesting that I think the recruiting process has shifted again, where 5-6 years ago it was, hey, you've got to go and start recruiting underclassmen. Like, you can't focus strictly on 1 year. And now I think it's almost to the point where it used to be, talk to these underclassmen, but still spend a majority of your time on the current class.
Yeah.
I think they're recruiting equally as hard, almost, whether it's Oregon or just college football in general, underclassmen as they are upperclassmen. And the amount of prospects that we're going to see roll through Eugene for that spring game, and for all of spring, I think, I mean, as we've been recording this podcast, I know it's not a top 50 recruit or whatever, but, you know, 2024 wide receiver, you know, he's a three-star prospect. He has an offer from Oregon. Malachi Durant just tweeted out, hey, I'm spending spring break in Eugene, for, you know, duck, duck, duck emojis. Like, just the amount of players that are going to roll through Eugene, whether they're 2024 kids or they're underclassmen in 2025, 2026, or even 2027, in the next 30 days is going to be fascinating. And I just think it's interesting to see how it's shifted again, where if you're not recruiting both classes, you know, both groups heavily, you're going to get left behind. And this is a huge month for Oregon in 2024, but also to set the stage for 2025 and maybe even 2026.
This is why our good friend Marshall Malko has a job.
I mean, very much so.
There are so many prospects to know, and like you throw into it, Matt, I think you're right in that, you know, it's a split between, you know, upperclassmen and underclassmen. Well, how about transfer portals and having to be involved, yeah, in recruiting them? I know you won't be tripping any of them out here during spring because, you know, I guess they could theoretically visit, but they couldn't, you know, enter the portal again until, what is it, a couple of days after spring ends. But yeah, no, it is wild how many prospects. And whenever we do have Marshall on the show again, which I hope we get sometime this summer, I don't know if we've ever asked, like, how many prospects does he have to know at one time and, like, familiarize himself with, and what kind of confusion there might be of, okay, is it that, say, for instance, maybe there's a player with the same name from two different parts of the country. I mean, that's the type of stuff you'd be running up against, with as much work as you have to do on the recruiting angle. So, yeah, no, recruiting never stops. We'll have full coverage of that, including over these next couple of weeks when we're out at practice, I would imagine. There'll be some recruits out there. We'll do our best to identify and kind of inform who's here for spring. So good one from Robbie to start. We're going to go now to a question from @_FOTEF17. What are your thoughts on Oregon's backup quarterback situation? This is kind of an interesting one. I think we've addressed this a little bit. It may be more than a little bit, but obviously, everybody knows what's going on with Bo as a starting quarterback. There's no questions there. This is, by the way, the first time in a while we'll enter a spring without really any questions about who the quarterback will be. And you have to go back to when it was Justin Herbert 2019. So it's been about 4 years, which is kind of wild. So that part is interesting. And then the backups, like, hey, we really don't know, by the way, much of anything about one of them, Austin Nova said. So it's hard for me to have too many thoughts other than physically he looks like he's got a ways to go. I think we've all kind of chimed in on that, you know, needs to add some weight. I don't think he's somebody who can really help right now. Sure, he can maybe get tossed into a game situation if needed and contribute, but I think you'd like to avoid that. And then Ty Thompson, this is probably the only reason we want to answer this question, is because he's just such an interesting character to talk about. What is he, and what kind of strides can he make? Because physically, I will say it over and over again, he checks all the boxes of what you want. It's just some of the processing stuff and the in-game stuff, which we haven't loved. But I also think it's kind of like, you know, when you only play a certain number of snaps in a season and they're all in mop-up duty, and for whatever reason, they happen over and over every time out there, it seems like something goes wrong. The sense from the fan base of those watching regularly is like, he's not very good. So, I mean, what he's shown in games hasn't been incredible, but I still certainly haven't given up on him. Now to like the question of how would I feel if Bo Nix isn't available? The answer is not very good. But I would also question how many teams in the country would say, I feel amazing if my starting quarterback goes down, because in the era of the transfer portal, it's really hard to just carry like two to three competent quarterbacks at once. And I think Oregon has a competent starting quarterback, and they have a really, really high-end physical tool prospect in Thompson. But we don't really know if there's a guy after Bo who can, frankly, win you football games. And I don't think that's a great situation, but it's not different than or too remarkable compared to most, I think, out there right now.
Yeah, if there is a school that tells you that they're okay with their backup quarterback coming into the game, that means that they don't have a starting quarterback that they rely on. So I think it's pretty simple as that. I don't think there's a lot to answer here. Oregon's backup quarterback situation is the same as it was last year, just with Oz and Novosad. Ty Thompson's the two who Eric just went through, hasn't been great in games, but physically and had all the hype as a recruit coming out of high school. He's there. He seems to be fine in practice. We've heard pretty good things about him in practice. He just hasn't lived up to the hype during any of the games that he's played in. And they've all been, like Eric said, during mop-up time or like the first play after halftime against, I forgot what team it was at, Washington. No, it wasn't Washington. I can't remember what it was. But, just random games like that where he's gotten in. He really hasn't had the chance to, I think, personally control the offense. I think it's all been very scripted. And just been really safe plays. Maybe that's because it's on purpose that they don't want Ty throwing down the ball down the field, but I don't know. And I don't think, frankly, unless it's a coach that's listening, I don't think a lot of us know whether or not their confidence level in Ty is to just never let him throw the ball during a game. But yeah, and then Novosad is just there. This is a year of development. This is a year of learning. This is a year of needing to add weight. He's a tallish kid, but he's really skinny. He's going to need to add some more weight, some more muscle in order to play at the college level. I think this conversation is better suited like for next year, what the backup quarterback situation is after Bo Nix leaves. For now, it's Bo Nix and then everybody else. And then Ty Thompson is on the top of the list of everybody else. So I think it's more or less the same thing as we had last season.
I think this is a spring where we need to find out what Ty Thompson can do, see what Novosad can do, so that you have a clear idea, kind of, not maybe clear, but you have a good idea of where you're at going into fall camp and whether you need to go after a blue chip. You know, we've talked about this, a blue chip five-star quarterback, if you can get them, to maybe jump those two or compete with those two, or do you go portal? Do you go both? And frankly, like I think you have to commend Ty Thompson for sticking through it, because so often we see guys just bounce. Like the first time that they don't have success, I think the fan base has shifted from being fully in support of Ty to now not really having the confidence in Ty. Fair or not, and I think it's unfair because we really haven't seen him in game situations, in situations where he's asked to succeed or play with the normal unit. Has he looked good when he's played? No, he hasn't. But I still don't think we really know what he can do yet. And I think that's maybe the biggest concern. To Eric's point, like, yeah, if he goes down, if Bo goes down, then like Oregon's in a world of hurt here. Because you don't know what you have with any of these guys. And so I think it's all about information gathering and trying to see how many game situations you can put these two or one of them in, just so you have a better understanding of what you have, where you have it going into spring football 2024 after 2023 season's over.
Yeah, I agree with the, by the way, just last thought, just the, on the tie thing, it's commendable. and I get, it's funny because we're patting a kid on the back for not transferring after 3 years or whatever, 2 years. But in like today's portal world, like that's not, like it's not that infrequent that that's the case where a kid shows up and doesn't work out right away and he's at another school across the country, in a blink of an eye. So for Ty to be here, and as Matt said, gosh, what a turn of events in terms of just the fan perception and the way that they have gone from supporting him kind of blindly as the preferred quarterback over over Anthony Brown back in 21 to last year. He gets in a couple of times. And again, remember during the offseason, there were definitely some, we want Ty over Bo. There was some frustration from the fan base in general that they brought in Bo Nix. I remember we did, what did we do? One of those live shows, live streams, and people were like, why are they adding Bo? Like, we want it to be Ty. We want to develop a player and see it go. And then this, after this last season, those probably, I don't know if it's the same folks, but a lot of people are now echoing the, he stinks, we don't want him, we'll be better off if he left kind of crowd. So, I mean, it's a big year for him. And the ultimate thing that's probably tough is it feels like a big year, but probably not going to have a great idea of his development unless he does get into some games on Saturdays. And so this kind of discussion we're having right now of like, is he good? Is he bad? Will probably be ongoing until the fall of 2024, assuming he sticks around. So I guess buckle up. We're going to put this, the Ty Thompson train. It'll be rolling and it could be a rocky ride.
Well, you brought up something that, like, we're so quick to make these swooping assumptions that these guys are going to be really good. We did, the fan base did the same thing with Khalil Ware for Oregon basketball. And instead of just letting guys show up and we get a sense of where they're at and we get a sense of kind of what their games are like before making these swooping decisions, that these guys need to be a starter as a true freshman at the most difficult position in all of sports, which is quarterback. Like, that's such a big ask, and so few people do it and then excel at a high level. I mean, what would our perceptions be of Ty Thompson right now if no one had put those lofty expectations that he was going to beat out, you know, Anthony Brown to be the starter as a true freshman? And instead just said, like, let's see where he's at in 2 years. Would we have any kind of concern with him right now? Like, hey, like, he's shown youth. He's, you know, the inexperience of youth. He's got some things to improve on, but, like, he's got a rocket. He's mobile. He seems to be a good teammate. I mean, Bo Nix was on one of his social accounts this past week saying, like, the person when he leans to, you know, when – he has struggles on the field is Ty Thompson. Like, that tells me something about who Ty Thompson is as a person, as a player, as a teammate. Like, I don't think our perception would be negative towards Ty if we just didn't carry these, like, insane. And when I say we, I'm not saying us three, but just like the perception that this guy had to be a starter on a Power Five team competing for a conference championship day one. And because he didn't do it, now all of a sudden he's not good. So much of our perceptions could be changed if we just took an easy approach to it.
Yeah, of course. But then we all wouldn't have jobs because our company is the one that dictates who has the hype coming out of high school. And that's exactly what Ty Thompson had. Yeah. No, but like everybody's expectations is for him to come in and do so well, because in recent memory, we've had really good quarterbacks come out of high school and compete and start at the collegiate level, you know, like a Trevor Lawrence, like a Justin Fields. I know that those guys are, you know, first round talents, but you hope as a fan that your highly touted quarterback out of high school is going to come in and take over a program that needs a quarterback, which was Oregon. That's what, Texas is hoping for in Arch Manning. That's what they hope for in Quinn Ewers too, last season, who looked pretty good before he got hurt. It's what all of these schools look for. And when they don't, they are going to collapse on whoever that poor quarterback is because they didn't live up to expectations, which is unfortunately just how it goes in today's college football world, where if they don't do anything after 2 years, then there's going to be some expectations that, hey, you should move on and leave the school. If Ty Thompson were like a three-star recruit and looked at the way he did and threw the ball the way he did, we'd all be jumping for joy, hoping that he can turn himself into a starter for year three or year four in the 2024 season, or hoping that we can see him jump into the game and see what he can do as the three-star kid from, you know, let's continue that he's from Arizona, just the three-star kid that Oregon has matured and has taught and has learned under Bo Nix. But it's a different set of expectations when he's a high four-star, near five-star coming out of high school.
I mean, I'm just looking at the 2022 rankings, and I'm not trying to discredit, like, five-star shouldn't be good. Like, that's not the point, but like last year's rank, you know, the 2022 class wasn't particularly special at quarterback. But you look at the group and only one of these guys basically started, you know, in the top 20 of the rankings. And that was Cade Klubnik, who had to eventually replace DJU midway through the season, or towards the end of the season. I just think we saw such a run in about like a 7 or 8 year span of every year there being one or two really, really, really good freshman quarterbacks that show up and they're really special. And then that just kind of created this notion that like, just because you're a five-star now, you automatically have to be able to replicate what one or two guys every year did. And Ty Thompson didn't, so what? Like maybe he turns it on. I don't know. Like, I think there's just as equal of a chance that he's not good in 2024 as there is that he is good in 2024. But who knows? And I don't know. I think I'm going to change my perspective on him just because we place too lofty on expectations on a freshman to be someone that, you know, doesn't happen every single year.
And kind of to that point, Matt, that is, by the way, why I've shifted. I think Kingsley was the one that really marked.
I did the same thing with Kingsley.
Me, right? We both were kind of like, Kingsley has a chance to start right away, and the guy was out the door by October. And I've kind of since moved back with, I mean, you look at this year and even last year with Josh Connerly and just kind of going, okay, I don't want to predict a freshman is going to start and be a star right away. And if it turns out he is, that's awesome. But the reality is even the highest rated guys oftentimes take some time to start. Even Kayvon Thibodeau wasn't an opening day starter and didn't start until midway through the season. The Penei Sewells are often the exception and not the rule. So I do think, just to that point, Matt, I think there is definitely validity of the conversations we have do in some way inform fan conversations. So I'm going to give ourselves a little bit of credit for that and also mean that there's a little responsibility to not assume a guy is going to be really great off the way. Cause I bet if we went back and pulled our podcast clips from when Ty arrived here, I don't think we were saying, gosh, he's going to start right away. But I do think we were like, man, there's a lot of upside here, a lot of excitement and right. Maybe he can push to start. So I think even we can kind of correct the way we go about presenting young players when they arrive. So.
All right, let's take a quick break and we come back. We'll wrap up the podcast.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Matt Preem, Jared Mack, Eric Scopel on the show. A couple questions in. We've got one or two more to go. Can't remember.
We've got one, Matt. It's a little bit of a quick Monday here. And it's a question from another familiar name. At Prince Puddles asks, is this the best wide receiver room in Oregon history? Depth of talent, standout talents like Franklin Holden and young guys like Dickey and Casper. Hard to think of a better wide receiver room than this one. Am I wrong? I think he is wrong. Just like off the top of my head here, 2002 had Sammy Parker, had Keenan Howery, and had Demetrius Williams, who are three of the school's all-time, five all-time leaders in receiving yards and receptions. So I think that's probably the, at this point, you know, kind of the high watermark, and it's probably hard to hit. I'd also
all
add,
those guys were NFL players too.
Yeah, and I think all of those were top. I can't remember. I'm not going to try to. I'm going to date myself because it's been a long time. Those are 20 years ago. I'm trying to think of where they were drafted. I think they were all like top 4 or 5 round draft picks, but these guys were drafted in like 2003. So I'm not going to go too far out on the limb with trying to remember their draft positioning. But like, yeah, so I don't think, first off, I don't think it's the best. Now, I'd even say like on paper, like there have been some groups that I think were deeper in the past. Now, you could convince me top tier talent if Dickey is ready right away, Franklin's ready right away, and Holden stuff works out, like best case, and we like what we see at Tez and Hudson, that could be a really special group. But I don't think so. I think that's a stretch, because I don't even know if I think this group is better than like how many, where does this group stack up for you? This is like the third best position group on offense to me, behind quarterback and running back.
I can see that. I don't agree with it either. We have had this literal conversation on this very same podcast 2 years ago with true freshmen Dante Thornton, Troy Franklin, Doug Williams, Micah Pittman, Isaiah Crocker, Josh Delgado, Johnny Johnson, yeah. Jalen Redd. Yeah. We, on paper, everybody who was an Oregon fan thought that that was the best wide receiving group Oregon has had in the history of their program. And they went out and threw the ball 6 times. So it didn't turn out well. I think that this wide receiver room is extremely talented. They've got the top tier talent in Troy Franklin, who could certainly work himself into like a day one, probably a day two draft pick. Jurion Dickey, we have the 5-star hype around him as well. So we all expect him to do well. But Trayshon Holden was a good player at Alabama. Tez Johnson was really good at Troy as a slot receiver. Chris Hudson has had some good moments here at Oregon. And then you have other true freshmen like Ashton Cozart, who is another highly rated recruit who, by all accounts, is pretty good. And then Kyle Casper in his sophomore season. So there's a lot of talent on paper, but I don't think it's the best of all time. I mean, on paper, it looks great, but so did that 2021 team. And I would say on paper, that 2021 team looks better than this team.
I would say no. In a large part, Eric brought up probably the group I was going to go with as number one. But a counter to that would be maybe 2014.
I was looking at that too. That's another good one, Matt. Yeah.
Keenan Lowe, Charles Nelson, Devin Allen. You also had Dwayne Stanford, Darren Carrington. Your tight ends had Farrell Brown, Johnny Munt, Evan Bayless. All three of those guys made the NFL. Carrington was on track before he got suspended from Oregon and eventually booted. I think Dwayne Stanford had a stint. Keenan Lowe had a stint. Devin Allen's currently in the NFL with some kind of a stint. That was a really special unit. Another one that I would probably go back and look at is the year before, 2013. That group had a lot of the same guys. And then on top of that, had Josh Huff and Braylon Addison on the unit as well. Byron Marshall was a receiver in 2014 as well for Oregon. So I would say no. This season's group, though, like on paper, has the potential to be a really good unit, because across the board, basically, are 4 and 5-star caliber guys at positions, you know, aside from, you know, the occasional Tez Johnson or the occasional Justice Lowe, if maybe he works his way into the rotation. And even he, by some services, was rated as a 4-star. I think on paper, like, this group has the potential to maybe put themselves into that discussion, but that's such a lofty ask for a group of, you know, Troy Franklin's established. I think Hudson's established. Tez is established, but at a different school. Holden's established, but at a different school. And then everybody else, like, you know, Franklin's really the only one that's put up really good numbers. Tez did it, but did it at a group of five school. So you have to acknowledge it, but how does that translate to this level? Is it one for one, or is he going to lose some? Is he going to be used as much? Does he have to play as much because the talent he's playing around is better? I don't know. Maybe he does play as much as he did at Troy this season. But there's really only one guy that you can say is like put up really good stats at the highest level of college football. And I feel like if you're going to be in that discussion of greatest of all time, you got to have more than one dude. I don't know what the number is, but you got to have more than one guy that's had like a really special season.
So yeah, that was kind of the counter I was trying to make earlier. And I agree. Like if you look at the school's all-time list, which again, kind of interesting to look through just in general, but you look at 2002, I mentioned that when you had three guys in your top five, 2013, Matt mentioned it, had Addison and Huff. Those are two more guys in the top eight. That's just like the depth of what you're talking about. I think where you could, with this year's group, get to a point where you could say that they need to be considered is if Franklin has a super special year. And like, let's just be honest, like if you go look at the single season lists, it's kind of amazing. Like if he has 1,200 yards receiving, that's the school record. Mm-hmm. Like that's not that long. That's 100 yards per game in a 12-game regular season. And if they play 13, 14, maybe 15, probably not, maybe 15 games, then you'd be looking at like he just has to have like 70 yards per game to get there. So like I think there's probably a decent chance Franklin puts up one of the better individual single season receiving lists, because you look at the stats here, like it's not that lofty of a track to pull through. You know, about 75 receptions, 1,200 yards, 13 touchdowns, and there you go. That's the school record basically across the board, what I just mentioned. So I think it's possible Franklin puts up a really big year, but to the point we made earlier, like none of the other guys are really proven here. Hudson's had some success. He's had some moments. I know we're going to get some comments about why we're overlooking him, but that's just every podcast now. But like in general, like the other guys just haven't proven too much. And while I want to be champion Dickey and Casper as exciting young players, I also want to be careful to the point we made earlier of where we're not like, gosh, Dickey and Casper are amazing going into the season, and then neither of them have much of a role. And suddenly we're like, what's wrong with Dickey and Casper? Because that seems to be the trend that we go through when we promote players as being amazing and expecting them to just tear it up their first year. And then when they don't, they become afterthoughts. So, but yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement. This isn't probably going to be the best single season group Oregon's had, but like maybe there's a world where Bo Nix has a Heisman Trophy caliber season and throws the ball all over the yard and sets school records. And we have to, you know, egg on our face.
Like,
yeah.
Should they even be trying to throw it all over the place? Because you have Bucky and Noah who are very, very good at carrying the football while running.
We should call Mario back and say, hey, Mario, we got all these weapons that you don't need to use.
I mean, I understand, like, yes, you want to throw the football. But, like, to Eric's point, like, if – Should Bo Nix be throwing the ball more than 40 times a game? I don't think so. With the guys that you have at running back.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, absolutely not. That's a lot. I don't – did Bo probably threw over 40 times, like, twice last year, right? Like, definitely against Washington State because they absolutely needed to. But,
yeah.
No, I mean, it's a really great offensive attack, and I'm sure we'll get into this over the course of spring ball and what Will Stein brings to the table. But – yeah, as long as that offensive line holds up with a lot of newcomers, they'll be able to run, they'll be able to throw, they'll be able to do whatever they want, just like last season. I think it'll be interesting, to the end of Eric's point, to come back and look maybe at this question specifically and just be like, okay, these are the wide receiver years that were during X era, so the Will Stein, Kenny Dillingham era, compared to what they were in the Cristobal era, who had similar probably range of talent, and then what it was during the Chip Kelly era. And just to see the disparity in how much Oregon is throwing the ball now versus then, and just the level of talent that they're using. Because I think that Dillingham's and hopefully what Stein will bring to the table, I think their offenses are going to be probably run first, but a lot of easy passes, a lot of yards after the catch, and a couple of deep shots a game. And I think it'll be something that Bo Nix doesn't need to throw 40 times, probably doesn't even need to really throw like 35 or more times, just because it'll just be a lot of easy throws and a lot of easy yards. What do you got for me, Eric?
Bo threw it 40 times twice. You named one of them Washington State. The other was against Oregon State. And then on average, about 32 passes per game. It was over 30, though, for about half.
That makes sense. Yeah, to Matt's point, they could probably win if they did do a Mario Cristobal approach and then let Bo throw 15 times. It just depends how the defense would do on the other side of the ball.
Bo threw it 35 times. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the only other point. You go ahead. I'll bring it up after.
I was just going to say 35 times attempts in a game this past season. He only did it 5 times. So like, let's set the number there. Like,
yeah.
Because if it to get to the like years where you have these receivers that put up just insane numbers and you have more than one do it, you got to have games where it's like the Oregon State game or the Washington State game. Because against OSU, Cota went for 136 and Franklin went for 78. And then your third leading receiver was Ferguson with 53 yards. Then against the Cougars, Franklin went for 137 and Cota went for 84. And then Hudson had 72. So, like, to get these numbers where you're seeing just really special years from more than one guy, you got to throw it a lot. And I just don't think it's in Oregon's best interest to be throwing even 35 times a game.
The only point I was going to make up, and by the way, I'm in agreement on all of this in terms of what's in their best interest. The only reason I would pause a little bit is just how good is the offensive line going to be? I know we've been high on it.
Sure.
But I think last year, so much of that was reliant upon, we've got some real dudes up front that are experienced. I know that the draft stock isn't fantastic, and it's possible that none of them get taken, or if they do get taken, it's right at the end. But they're at least experienced guys. This year's group probably has more talent, we think, but certainly less experience together. And then I did want to throw one Jared's way. Matt and I both kind of had some groups that we thought of right away. Was there a group that, like when you thought of the best group you've seen at Oregon, was there one that jumped right to your head, Jared? I'm just curious because Matt and I obviously have been watching it a little bit longer. I'm just curious, what was your barometer there?
In terms of just like unbelievable wide receiver core,
at Oregon, what was like, is there one that you're like, that was the best I remembered? Or is there? Yeah.
It's probably either the 2014 or 2015 team. Those were just dudes. It's hard to compare because none of those guys were great NFL players. And
right. For
a lot of what I believe or what I think of when I look back at college wide receiver cores, I'm like, all right, how did they do in the NFL? Like you look back at the Miami teams and like the 80s and the early 00s, those were elite guys in college and elite guys in the NFL. But granted, that was like the whole Chip Kelly thing where they had really great guys in college and then not a lot of unbelievable talent in the NFL, at least from an offensive perspective. But those teams in the 2014, 2015, especially with Vernon Adams, those were some of the guys that I thought were really great receivers for Oregon. But they were a lot of short yardages, yards after the catch, similar to what Oregon has been doing the last two seasons. So I guess that's it for me specifically.
All right. Then I guess that does it for us here on the podcast. All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for submitting the questions. As always, we'll be back at practice on Tuesday with a Wednesday breakdown of what we learned from day 3 of 15 total days of spring football during this season. 13 of those days will come during April. So big month for Oregon football on the practice field. We'll be there to cover it all. So that will be on the show next. And until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.